Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, fears of a possible genocide in the Central African Republic prompt the UN to launch an inquiry into the violence there.
We don't wait until genocide is committed and then we call for prosecution. I think it is in our mandate to see how we can stop any advances towards genocide.
Young South Africans speak about the expectations from the country's next leadership ahead of the general elections.
I think maybe ANC can make something better, can change the leaders, from top up to bottom.
These stories and more to come in this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us.
Top story.
The UN has launched an inquiry into recent violence in Central African Republic, where fighting has displaced some 1 million people and left thousands dead. Investigators fear genocide will come next. Bernard Achomuna, who chairs the inquiry set up by the UN Security Council, announced that the inquiry that starts its mission on Tuesday will involve interviewing Christian and Muslim victims of violence and drop a list of suspects for eventual prosecution. In a moment, we'll be hearing from a senior crisis advisor at Amnesty International telling us about the inquiry. But first, here's a report by Simone Schlindwein, presented by Abubakar Jallo.
Borabi is a district in Bangui, capital of Central African Republic. Women sell fruit and vegetables on the street. The men sit in bars and drink beer. Young men armed with machetes and automatic weapons loiter nearby. Borabi is the stronghold of the anti-Balaka youth militia. This is where they have their headquarters. Borabi was also the constituency of former president Francois Bozize until he was toppled by the Seleka rebels in March 2013 and forced into exile. Many of his bodyguards and political allies live here, and for this reason, it was here that the Seleka rebels unleashed their fury on the civilian population. Borabi was where resistance to Seleka began growing, said anti-Balaka spokesman Emotion Gomez.
Our name comes from anti-Bala AK, meaning against the bullets of the AK-47. Our movement has a long history. Anti-Balaka have traditionally hunted down bandits and arrested them. That was before Bozize came to power. But once Njotodia had taken over and the Seleka started shooting and ill-treating us, we decided to regroup and fight them.
The majority of anti-Balaka fighters are youth without any schooling, sometimes even children as young as 10. They are motivated by their thirst for revenge, like this young anti-Balaka fighter.
I am now all alone. When the Seleka took Bangui on March 24, 2013, they shot my father. 2 months later, they came to our house once again and said my father had hidden weapons away. My mother and sister told them there were no weapons in the house, but the Seleka shot them both. Fortunately, I was out at the time. When I came home, I found them lying there, dead.
These traumatized orphans were an easy recruiting target for anti-Balaka leaders. They gave the thousands of young men and women machetes and knives. Employing drugs and mystical charms or fetishes, the militia leaders convinced many of them that they were immune to Seleka bullets. Thirsting for revenge and high on drugs, they tip over into murderous frenzy. This is the only explanation for violence and cannibalism directed not only against anti-Seleka rebels, but Muslim civilians as well.
Abubakar Jallo presented that report by Simone Schlindwein. Now, various groups like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have recently released reports outlining crimes committed by both the Seleka rebels and anti-Balaka militia in the Central African Republic. So how different is the new inquiry into human rights abuses there? To answer that question, I spoke to Joanne Marina, Senior Crisis Advisor at Amnesty International in London.
I think the commission is going to be investigating the same kinds of war crimes, crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing as non-governmental groups did. But the fact that this is an international UN-sponsored commission, I think, makes a difference. It gives it a special force. So in my view, the commission is very much worthwhile.
What are the main challenges that lie ahead in the course of gathering the kind of information that they need from the victims of the violence?
One problem I believe they're going to face is that the campaign of ethnic cleansing by anti-Balaka militia has been so intense that, in fact, they've succeeded in driving the majority of the Muslim population out of the entire western region of the country. So at present, there are actually very few cities and towns in which Muslims remain. Many of these Muslim victims of violence are now taking refuge in Cameroon and in Chad and other neighboring countries. But there are Muslim enclaves, and in my understanding, the commission will be visiting some of those enclaves to interview victims.
The inquiry is expected to last for 12 months. Isn't this such a long period for any action to be taken to save the country from further turmoil?
It is a very long period, and I really do hope that the commission will be setting out its findings in at least an interim way and calling for an increased international response, because in a year from now, if there is not greater attention within the coming year, the situation could completely fall apart.
Your organization has done research on the violence in the Central African Republic. Do you believe that the prosecution of suspected ringleaders would act as a deterrent, or it would rather sow the seeds of discord in communities?
Well, I think the seeds of discord have been sown. The level of mistrust and even hatred is very, very high. I think some of the popular discontent, though, is being manipulated by political actors and by heads of militia, often for not only political gain, but also economic gain. There's been an enormous amount of pillage, of targeting of businesses during the past year. So I think if the International Criminal Court were to target some of these high-level people, it could serve a dissuasive purpose and at least help restrain some of the violence which is now being encouraged and profited from by people at the top of these hierarchies.
I was speaking to Joanne Marina, Senior Crisis Advisor at Amnesty International.
Africa Link. Because Africa is more than just a headline.
At least 100,000 children living in refugee camps and hospitals in northern Cameroon are suffering from acute malnutrition. That's according to health officials and UN agencies. The majority of the children who are under the age of 5 are among the many Nigerians who fled attacks from the Boko Haram Islamists that have continued to wreak havoc in parts of northern Nigeria. The hospitals are now overwhelmed and are in urgent need of support to save the little ones. Our correspondent in Yaounde, Moki Kinzeka, visited North Cameroon and sent this report.
In a makeshift emergency ward in Meskin Private Hospital on the outskirts of Marua, far north of Cameroon, medical staff struggled to save the life of young Abdoulaye Bobo. On the outside of the clinic, 3-year-old Nana Haminatu longs for doctor's attention. Nana, like 40 other children, has been waiting for treatments for life-threatening sicknesses. Her mother, Ida Maimunatu, is getting impatient.
My first child was not well. I took him to a traditional healer and he died. My second child is now very weak and I have decided to come to the hospital because the government is asking us not to go for traditional treatment. Since I came here, nobody has attended to me.
A hospital staff, Mamha Catherine, says they are overwhelmed with the number of malnourished children brought in for treatment in the last 2 months, and they do not have the capacity to care for everyone.
As you can see for yourself, there are so many patients that we can attend to. We lack infrastructure. We lack staff. So what is certain is that some of the children whose lives may have been saved may end up dying.
Children here in Marua are mostly from families fleeing fighting in northern Nigeria, where the Islamic sect Boko Haram has been fighting to create an Islamic state governed by Sharia law. In the main refugee camp in Menowo, in the Mayotte-Chanaga division, where about 7,000 refugees live, Meskin hospitals estimate that more than 300 children are also suffering from serious life-threatening illnesses. Comfort Manda, who escaped the fighting in Borno State in Nigeria, says she has lost a child that was also badly malnourished.
My brother, it is very difficult. I don't know how I'll tell you, but the situation that I met here is too deplorable that I don't know what to do now.
Moki Kinzeka compiled that report. Over the past 20 years, South Africa has made tremendous progress in all sectors of life in the country. But at the same time, the country faces a number of challenges like poverty and unemployment in black South African communities. The gap between the rich and the poor has also widened since the country's first multiracial elections 20 years ago. And as the country heads towards another general elections scheduled for May this year, DW's Subri Govinda in South Africa spoke to young South Africans on their aspirations and the kind of South Africa they envisage.
I can definitely attest to the fact that South Africa has been better since 1994.
Nomzamo Zondi was only 7 years old 20 years ago when South Africa held its first democratic elections, which included people of all racial groups. As a young girl still in school in Amotana, north of Durban, Zondi lost her mother and elder sister to tuberculosis. Recently, she has also lost another sister, a younger one, to heart attack. Now, Zondi is the breadwinner and sole custodian of her three nephews and a niece. Despite the challenges as head of the house, 27-year-old Zondi is still studying and working as a social and community consultant in the Potchefstroom area of the province of KwaZulu-Natal. She believes the new South Africa has provided tremendous opportunities for the youth.
The one thing I can say is that as young people, we also need to play a role. We must not only be dependent. So, but as young people, what we yearn the most is economic freedom. So I think we also need to play our role in terms of the economic development by starting businesses and not only waiting for the assistance, but also coming forth with assistance for our benefits and bettering our lives and the rest of the South Africans.
Zondi, like millions of South Africans, understands the political setup and will vote in the forthcoming elections, the fifth such general elections since the landmark multiracial elections in 1994. Key issues of concern in this election for many youths include poverty, unemployment, and equal distribution of resources. 24-year-old Zwelatini Nkobela is also very concerned about these issues in the elections. Unlike Zondi, Nkobela does not have confidence in the current leadership of the country.
I think maybe ANC can make something better, can change the leaders, then change the leaders from top up to bottom.
27-year-old Eddie Mtwetwa is a receptionist at a gym in Durban. He is a qualified logistics consultant, but could not find good employment in his field of expertise. He's instead pinning his hopes on the newly formed Economic Freedom Fighters, led by expelled African National Congress, ANC Youth League leader, Julius Malema.
Let's just wait and see. But I think Julius is promising, but let's just wait and see how he mustn't act like those other politicians, yeah?
Subri Govinda, reporting from South Africa.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome to Learning by Ear and episode 4 of our new drama series about deforestation. Set within the dramatic backdrop of civil war, this story reveals how deforestation, the loss of trees and grasslands, has destroyed rural life and created conflict between two farming communities. Now thrown together as refugees in Dovani camp, these people are beginning to find common solutions for the future. Chief Apalo needs to persuade the women to try out a new stove he has built. Meanwhile, Chika is thinking up ways to put Mulogo off, for he does not stop flirting with her.
That Mulogo worries me. His ideas are pulled apart from mine. He thinks of top-down solutions, building a hydroelectric plant with dam and reservoir. I mean, really? For whom? For the rogue businesses to run their rogue timber mills and deplete our forests even further? And on top of that, he keeps flirting with me. Well, the only way to get him off my back is to put him off me, so that he will never want to come near me again. That's why I asked him to join me for a walk. I was soon on my favorite subject, saving the trees.
Ah, chica, don't waste your breath. Let's sit here and sing your favorite song. You can sing, I've heard you.
Are you saying, don't worry, be happy, cut down the forest and don't worry about climate change on this lonely planet? Mulugo, God, you are so shallow.
Well, you say there is a link. I don't see it. Climate change is happening, yes. But who says it's because of us cutting down trees?
Not only. Obviously, driving cars, heavy industry, burning wood, all add up.
Look, we have to clear forests. We have mouths to feed. I suppose you think people dying of starvation improves the quality of air, too.
That is a very cynical thing to say, and I do not appreciate being accused of such an awful thing. You're just not facing the facts. If we keep cutting down trees, we increase the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. They're called carbon emissions.
I know what they're called. Trees absorb those toxic gases and with sunlight turn them into oxygen. It's called photosynthesis.
Right.
How does deforestation increase carbon emissions? Is that proven?
Yes, and it is logical. With increasing levels of carbon dioxide from our cities and fewer trees to absorb them, we're increasing the layer of gases.
So-called greenhouse gases?
Right. You know all this. Why am I wasting my breath?
Okay. But who says that we humans cannot adapt? We adapted to other climate changes, didn't we?
So who is being cynical now? What sort of planet do you want? A treeless one? It is not me who wants people to starve. But if we go on madly cutting down trees, our crops will die, either from severe drought or extreme flooding.
But Europe has lost most of its trees, and I don't see them starving. It's just a plot to keep us poor and slaves to the economies.
Europe isn't near the equator. They don't have rainforests. They have a temperate climate and lots of rain. But they're already experiencing floods and extreme water shortages. The USA too. We in Africa lose so much of our water to the heat, but our wonderful rainforests return that lost moisture. Without the balancing power of trees, we cannot survive.
We need to connect our villages to power stations and cities. We can't live by scrapping and living together in the jungle.
Do you want to shift millions of people out of the forests? For what? For a life in the city? Go there. What do you see?
Roads, shops, decent housing.
And you don't see the slums? People from rural areas, over 14 million of them, crammed into our African cities, surviving from rubbish of the streets, living hand to mouth.
Hey, calm down, chica. You will have a heart attack. You are so beautiful. You could be anything you wanted. Why do you work in a refugee camp?
Mulogo, I love this work and I'm sorry if I shouted. I just see how important trees are. Africa was so rich in trees. Plants, animals, flowers. We are losing them all in our lifetime. We need clean air, safe water, fuel, medicine, and shelter. Trees provide us with all that. We should respect them. Look around you and wonder at the role they play. Come, I challenge you to open your mind.
Challenge accepted. But you'll have to talk to me a lot more to persuade me in private.
Ten more children have gone down with severe diarrhea, Talib. The water sources are contaminated. We must identify them and put a fence around them.
I've already planned to go out with the youth group and collect water samples. We can check them in our mini lab. Let's draw posters to remind people not to let children play and drink water where the cattle are. Oh, by the way, Help Africa has got funding for a new deep well, and we're all going to take part in building it. Here are some photos of what it will look like.
What a wonderful sight. Fresh water coming out of the tap. But people might misuse it.
Which is why before we install it, we want to conduct classes on how to use the well and conserve water. It links wonderfully into our work on forest conservation.
Oh, Talib, I really admire the work you and Chika do.
You're really opening my eyes to my environment. It's not just about scraping and surviving from the earth. It's about making the earth rich again.
Chief Apalo says the same thing.
Aye, Chief Apalo. I think every time he sees me, he sees my husband. They fought bitterly, you know, over land rights.
Yes, I know. But you're very respected here by your community, and you really inspire other women here too. You have become quite a role model, you know. And I think Chief Apalo sees that. Which reminds me, he asked me to come by his house. Can you organize a poster drawing session with the ladies and put them up around the water sources? I'll see you later. Hey, this looks really interesting.
Yes, it is a highly efficient wood burning stove. I made it myself.
Cool, show me how it works.
Well, first I want to stress that it's really cheap to make. You just need local materials, nothing imported.
Ah, I can see that. You've got clay bricks and a metal cylinder. Oh, it's an old bucket. You can find stuff like that anywhere.
Exactly. Now, see these 6 bricks?
Yes.
They fit into a semicircle, like this. See?
Right.
Now, I place this round metal cylinder, like this, on the bricks. And this fits inside the stove, like a chimney. See? It is made of clay, which is excellent insulation material. Very porous and very light. Now, here I have some dry wood. Dried leaves and grass. I place them here in the large opening. You see the small hole at the bottom?
Yes.
Well, that's where the air comes in underneath. Now, I place sticks and tinder on top of the grass. And then look, the flames are beautifully contained.
And the fire is protected inside the cylinder.
Exactly. Which means you need less fuel. Now, let's leave it to burn for a little while, so that it gets nice and hot.
A round metal cylinder on bricks. It looks like a small rocket.
That's it. The rocket stove. But to tell you the truth, I didn't invent it. They're on sale at a Banto market.
Ah, so there's a patent. We can't make and sell them.
No. But we can make this to use ourselves. That's what I wanted to show you. And it saves up to 50% wood. That helps to save our forests, doesn't it?
Sir, I congratulate you. Let me go and get some water. We don't want to waste that lovely fire. Let's boil up a big pot of tea.
Isi, the truck is coming. I can hear the dogs barking in the distance. Look, see the cloud of dust.
Where is my pen? Akiki, my papers, my shoes. Oh, goodness. Let's run. I have to register the new arrivals with Chika. What if Kadra is there? I'll be too happy and nervous to write down any names. I am shaking already. Hurry, keep up.
Isi, please, wait for me. Wait for me, Isi.
And that's all for today from our Learning by Ear series, If a Tree Falls. In our next episode, Akiki reveals a secret about her sister and Isi's twin brother. Remember, if you want to hear the program again or tell friends about it, please visit our website at dw.de/lbe. Goodbye for now.
And now a recap of the stories that we've covered for you on the program. The UN has launched an inquiry into recent violence in the Central African Republic, where fighting has displaced some 1 million people. At least 100,000 children living in refugee camps and hospitals in northern Cameroon are suffering from acute malnutrition. We've also been hearing voices of young South Africans ahead of the general elections in May this year. With that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments and suggestions on the stories that we've covered, you can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +491609575950. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time, and I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn saying take care.